Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, welcome to Brain Injury Radio Network. Tonight is our regular Wednesday installment of our program Recovery Now with your host, Kim Justice. If you'd like to know more about my story, you can find it at inaflash.org. I, too, am a fellow traumatic brain injury survivor. I appreciate you tuning in tonight, and as always, I look forward to your input. So now, we'll get on with the show. Well, hello, and happy hump night from somewhere in Middle America. Hope you guys are all doing well tonight. I'm not sure if we've had the first day of summer yet, but boy, this week it has sure been feeling like it. So in any case, for those of you who are new around here, Recovery Now is a gathering place for anyone seeking recovery from the challenges of life on life's terms. Guests share their experience, strength, and hope. We discuss useful tools that have helped us lighten the load of our journey through recovery. More will be revealed. This is a we recovery program because it is in the we that we find the new me. We focus on the four A's of recovery: awareness, acceptance, action, and adaptation. This is a place for survivors striving to become thrivers, and for that, it takes a good bit of warrior. Again, I'm your regular Wednesday host, Kim Justice, and the second Wednesday of each month, I am blessed to have a wonderful co-host with me, Karen Robinson, and you can find out more about Karen at her great blog, HopeTBI.com. And tonight we are going to be talking about, at least, you know, we've planned for a number of weeks and are going to primarily be talking about autoimmune disorders at the beginning, and TBI, of course. At the beginning of the pandemic, when they talked about people with underlying conditions, quote unquote, you know, a lot of people took that to mean old people and people with maybe heart, cancer, diabetes, one of the top three. And I was to find out that there are 80 autoimmune disorders. And so tonight, Karen and I are going to talk about what autoimmune disorders are, how they manifest, and what we can do to mitigate and strengthen our autoimmune systems. But in the meantime, something came to my attention in the last week, and I'd just like to put it in current news and events with a brief op-ed before we start with the regular program. Because it was something, you know, for those of you who are regular listeners, I always say that coincidence is God's way of working anonymously. And I was not looking for what I'm going to talk to you about in a moment. I was working on something else, doing some research, and an article popped in front of me. And I read it, and it was like a slap in the face because I fit in one of those categories and Karen fits in one of those categories and most of the listeners here would fit in one of these categories, and I found it extremely offensive. And so time and in any context, this would be a really heinous, disgusting thing to say. But right now, we're at a time where you can't turn in any direction without hearing about sexism, racism, bias, inclusion. And one group that often gets forgotten in that discussion are people with disabilities, in this case, brain disabilities. And believe it or not, there is actually a disability rights movement. Justin Dart is considered one of the founders among many of that movement. And that's a totally different story. But like a lot of what you've been hearing today, things were a lot different not all that long ago. And progress has been made. And one of the things we're doing here, we're an advocacy network that helps raise awareness and provide advocacy for people with brain injury. And so we try to bat down the ignorance and the misunderstanding. So what I'd like to do is I'm going to stick to the facts and my opinion, a couple of my opinions. I'm going to make it brief, and then I'm going to bring Karen on. She can comment if she likes, or we'll go out on with the rest of the program. And if you would like to comment, the number is 424-243-9540. Again, 424-243-9540, and you need to press 1 so that I know that you want to speak. I want to apologize up front for the language, because not that I've never said, I'm not a Pollyanna, not that I've never said a naughty word, but I don't do it on the air, and I don't do it frequently. And this person chose to do it publicly in writing, in an interview. He allowed this to be put in an article, and then was given the opportunity by CNN to come on live and apologize, because just about everybody that hears this, there's a sharp intake of breath with an ouch. Wow, was that out of line? And so they gave him an opportunity to apologize. And by gosh, he didn't see any need at all to apologize in his arrogance, because he said it took him exactly where he wanted to go, and that is to public attention. So I'm not going to read you the whole article, because the context in which this was spoken is really not relevant. The big picture is that the words were spoken at all in any context, in any day and age, but particularly in this day and age and in this climate. But this is an excerpt from a Vanity Fair magazine article dated May 15th, 2021 by Bess Levin. And so the article goes on about a paragraph, and then it says, all of which sounds reasonable. Then Watkins says this, quote unquote, a lot of these defendants, and I'm going to use this colloquial term, perhaps disrespectfully, but they are all fucking short bus people. These are people with brain damage. They're fucking retarded. They're on the goddamn spectrum. I'm going to give you a minute to absorb that, because a lot of us have brain injury here. And the thing that I found as disgusting personally as his comment, because in my mind, an attorney is held to a higher level of due diligence, and that was certainly not demonstrated. What bothered me is that he said not only his comments were offensive, but he set off a wildfire on social media of people not catching the heinous manner with which he projected his thought. Nobody seemed to notice that. But what they did do, a couple of people asked what a short bus was on the posts underneath, and someone answered them in each case that the short bus is a shorter bus that is used by children or adults with developmental disabilities. A lot of times they don't drive in for a ride to school. That's what a short bus is. And so then people who were in the chats under this article proceeded like spoiled kids, ignorant kids with a new toy, to take that phrase and start tossing it around, making jokes and making fun of the way that it suited their own narrative. And so, of course, that was going to bother me. I took business law many moons ago, and I remembered that a lawyer has two sets of obligations, really, if I remember correctly. One is to their client, and the other to the court in which they appear. In my opinion, Mr. Albert Watkins, this attorney, is entering that defense not in the court to the judge with the supporting evidence at the time this article was printed back in May, or even since, to my knowledge, but through social media. And to me, he crossed the line from the First Amendment into hate speech. Because we don't use words like that anymore. And we don't talk about people like that anymore. And I'm going to tell you one more thing briefly. What I can tell you is that Albert Watkins, the attorney, if you have some disdain about what he said, I will have you know that the Autism Foundation has already put out a statement. I posted a photo on the Scrolling Pictures tonight that Brain Injury Association, the Brain Injury Association of America, gave me permission to use, and they have sworn, if they haven't already, that they'll also be putting out a statement, pleasure, about this. And so many groups and people were highly offended. And I can give you a contact information, if you'd like, to Mr. Watkins, if you'd like to express your displeasure, either by telephone, email, or snail mail address. But their website, easy enough to find, Albert, A-L-B-E-R-T, Watkins, W-A-T-K-I-N-S, Google it, Albert Watkins, lawyer, M-O for Missouri. Excuse me, he's licensed in Missouri. So Albert Watkins, attorney or lawyer, Missouri. And you will see his website come up, K&W Law. And right there is his phone number, his email address, and again, the snail mail address. And if you find this offensive, you can sign on to one of the letters. Our sponsor, TBI Survivor Network, is also weighing in on this, as I just did for Brain Injury Radio. And I encourage you, this is an opportunity. So many people have struggled with their brain injuries and have experienced personally but individually the ignorance and the not knowing of people. We call this a silent epidemic in a lot of cases because we don't have an obvious tell. But it's something we live with every day. And if you've been through it or someone in your family's been through it, it's not funny. And it's not worthy fodder for grandstanding with legalese wrapped in the flag. In my opinion, absolutely not appropriate. So that's my say to Mr. Watkins. I don't appreciate the way that you do your business. And if I was looking for a lawyer, personally me, that's sure not where I'd want to go. I wouldn't want to be his client and be referred to like that. But in any case, with that, I did want to mention something that you all might want to take a look at, because if you know people, also pass this on, this part of the link to this show. Pass it on if you know somebody that is or has loved ones that have a developmental disability, have autism, or have suffered a brain injury, whether that's a TBI from an accident or a fall or domestic abuse or an ABI from a stroke, a ruptured brain aneurysm, feel free to pass this information on. It's all a matter of public record. It can be Googled. It's been fact-checked. It's right there. And then he himself, as I said, went on CNN to offer why no apology was needed on his part, which, wow, double infraction. I'll also recommend to you Willowbrook. Now, Willowbrook was an institution in Staten Island in New York, and it was open from 1947 to 1987. And it warehoused children with intellectual disabilities. In 1972, with a secret key, a stolen key, actually, by a doctor that worked there and thought that the conditions and the things going on there were deplorable, let Geraldo in a side door where he took footage and launched a documentary, which can still be seen. It's called The Last Disgrace. And he does an excellent documentary that, like I said, launched his career about the conditions at this school. It was meant for children with intellectual disabilities, but as it turns out, children with anything that society found uncomfortable, whether it was seizure disorder or the next one I will tell you is Willowbrook 25 years later. Another documentary called Unforgotten 25 years after Willowbrook shows Geraldo again, but also shows Bernard Carabello. He's interviewed. Now, he suffered from cerebral palsy and spent 18 years at Willowbrook, misdiagnosed. And this was a horrible, horrible place. 4,000 people. It had a capacity for 4,000 people, and 6,000 were there. A tremendous amount of abuse went on there. Experiments. They used children to experiment. Some very heinous things. And so again, before people use these terms loosely, and think about the people that have been through this and what they've had to live, the reality that they've lived, and then to come on in a public platform and humiliate and downgrade a protected class of vulnerable people to me is unthinkable. And yet he did it unapologetically. So again, I hope you'll look him up or contact me, and I'll be happy to give you that contact information. And we're going to keep doing what we do, which is try to debunk that kind of ignorant hate speech and do a little pushback on the difference. I mean, it's going on all over the country. Pushback between what is First Amendment and what is hate speech. And if you don't consider what he said that I read hate speech, I'd be very surprised, especially with this audience. Okay, with that, I'm going to bring on my co-host, Karen. Karen, nice to have you here tonight. Thanks for always being here and being dependable.
Hey, Kim. It's great to be here on board with you this evening, and thank you for the introduction. And yes, I also found that to be offensive. A part of me, when I first heard it referenced, was, of course, that's how people are speaking now, because there's no boundaries right now with how people are speaking. It's like the floodgates have been opened, and it's somehow tolerated that people are intolerable. And that was not the way I was raised, and that's not the world that I've raised my children to be in. So even though this is the world that we are in at the moment, our levels of tolerance and profound acceptance and compassion can override and overrule the bigotry and hate-centered speech that seems to consume our society as of late.
But absolutely.
Go ahead.
No, absolutely. Go ahead.
But to reference a whole subset of individuals as being crazy or as having lack of intelligence or referencing them as short bus types, individuals, or referencing them as retarded, or any of those buzzwords, if you will, is just highly inappropriate, and it's damaging. It's not just damaging to those who are recovering from brain injury or recovering from some of those disabilities, but it's damaging to the ignorant of society. Who are, and what I mean by the ignorant, I mean the people that are not educated about those types of injuries or those types of disease processes. People who are not educated about autism, who are not educated about polytrauma, who are not educated about cerebral palsy or multiple sclerosis or some of those other invisible type disease processes, autoimmune disorders, which we're discussing tonight. You know, when you don't live with it and you're not exposed to it on a daily basis, you don't necessarily think about it. However, when you're referencing as a professional in a public climate, particular attorney referenced, you're held to a higher acumen of professionalism and a higher standard of compassion and understanding, even if
you
don't agree. Well, you would hope.
Yeah.
That's the ideal, right? We're always looking for the ideal. The ideal does not seem to be played out as much as it should be nowadays. And what I would consider to be common sense, I find that often is not displayed as common sense among those outside of my circle. And everybody has their own definition of what hate speech insinuates and what that is referencing. And everybody has their own perception of of their own tolerance levels. Some people may have heard that quote and not thought a second thing about it. It may not have even called their attention to exactly what was said. However, those that
a lot of people
fall into those lines of any of the groups he referenced, I'm sure, and based on the public outcry and the public comments that are being made by the larger groups that represent the smaller individuals, obviously it was something that was done in bad taste and at the very least demands a personal apology to those groups and a personal accountability that, hey, you know, I screwed up. I fucked up on this this situation and I misspoke. I spoke without educating myself and, you know, and taking responsibility for poor choices. I'm not sure that he would be willing to do that based on his tone and tenure in that moment. It would be nice mm-hmm. to think that it would be nice to think of someone in his position would be willing to take personal responsibility for his choices and his actions. And certainly it doesn't reflect well on his firm or anyone that is associated with their firm because, you know,
right.
as a person that, you know, is recovering from a brain injury myself and also has, you know, autoimmune disorders, I can tell you it certainly has not affected my intelligence. And referencing folks on being on a short bus or being crazy or being something less than anyone else next to me is just false. I'm not less of a person because I have a brain injury. I'm not less of a person because I have any kind of cognitive struggles secondary to the injury that was caused to my body without my choice. Just like anyone that's
right.
on the spectrum, whether they're born with being on the spectrum or they're not diagnosed until they're older or they acquire some of that symptomology secondary to a brain trauma, you know, all those things that play into it, he just kind of, I guess, lit a fuse and a match there on something that goes beyond just the basic saying. And I think we live in a society now where we have to be mindful of the words we speak. We have to be mindful of how we're speaking those words, what kind of information we're putting out there. You know, I feel like, in a way, we're having to create our own fact-check situation here to continue to bring awareness and education about brain injuries and other folks with either neurodevelopmental disorders or cognitive disorders and exactly what that means and exactly what that doesn't mean. And while that's part of our role here with this show, is to bring awareness and knowledge and education and our personal experience to the table and hopefully help educate and help others feel not so isolated and alone in their existence or their recovery process or their experiences. We owe it to each other as humanity to not label each other with hateful jargon seeks to limit the ability to communicate in a way that's effective and in a way that not only builds people up, but allows them to flourish. And what he did was not allow anyone to be built up or educated by anything he said, but rather created more isolation, more divisiveness, and
let people think it was acceptable.
Lack of knowledge, really.
You know, yeah, to let people think it was acceptable, and we'll wind this part up. I just, you know, there's a thing. I used to be in my former career on a board of directors of a professional association, and I was the director of ethics and field practices. And I know that my career had this, and I'm sure the law field has this. And personally, my opinion is it's a flagrant violation of ethics and field practices to use hate speech. I know why he did it, the theatrics, the legal theater. He wanted to draw attention, and by making a crude remark like that, he did, to try to set up his defense. But again, a big difference these days, you have to be mindful between First Amendment and what would be considered hate speech. And I know that a lot of people in this community considered that to be hate speech. So in any case, I would just reiterate, we're not attorneys, we're not doctors, we're not experts in anything but our brain injuries. We do invest a lot of our time not making millions of dollars by trying to debunk ignorance, raise awareness, and bring support and advocacy to the community. And so tonight, like I said, because this popped in front of me when I wasn't looking for it, to me that meant that there was something I was supposed to do with it. And so what that was just a little op-ed opener tonight to make other people aware of it. Not everybody reads that publication, although now it's all over social media, and that's another thing that's, you know, a problem with social media, is that a lot of things get tried, things that are meant to be in court get tried in the court of public opinion and on social media, through social media and the media. And this comes up in a lot of, a lot of different ways it exhibits itself, and this was one of those. And so, again, without going any further, we've stuck to the facts, stuck to opinion, and that's it. So in any case, again, that was a quote directly from Albert Watkins, and he's welcome anytime he would like. If he'd like to call into the show and apologize, if he'd like to reconsider once the heat gets turned up, and he sees that he might have shot himself in the foot, he's welcome here, and I'm sure he'll know how to get a hold of me. And if you'd like to talk about that, he's certainly welcome to get a hold of me, and I'd be happy to have him on and gracious in hearing his apology. But in the meantime, like I said, if you listeners are at all offended by that and think it was inappropriate and you'd like to find your voice, a lot of times people are talking about, you know, situations they've been in individually confronted with by friends, family, employers, whoever, and they've been alone. Nobody in their corner, been alone facing it. And every now and again, an opportunity to find your voice is presented. And I felt like he kicked the door open in this case for people in the disability, particularly brain injury disability community, to be able to find their voice. And I'll help them do that. So thank you for your comments, Karen, and I think we'll go into our topic. How about that?
Sounds like a good plan. Let's hit the ground running.
Okay, I'm going to just say something and then turn it over to you, but for a time. But, you know, what is an autoimmune disease? I remember hearing in the beginning, like I said, in the pre-opening, that particularly like when COVID came around, or any type of illness comes around. You know, they talk about people with underlying conditions, and that phrase was thrown around so loosely, underlying conditions. And, you know, people would think that didn't apply to them because they weren't, first of all, they thought that it was just old people that got this. Not true. That's been debunked every way from Sunday. Or that underlying conditions were like cancer, heart disease, diabetes, which they are. But knowing about our show subject tonight, and when I started doing my homework, I was shocked to see that there were 80 underlying conditions. And so as people were taking things loosely, and now, you know, what we're seeing across the country for summer, and right now where I live, the Olympic swim trials are going on. The College World Series is on its way next week. The mask mandate went away a couple weeks ago. Bars and restaurants are at full capacity. The stadium is going to be at full capacity. They just decided. And so what you've got is a pandemic that is not over. The numbers are going down, which is great. I haven't looked in the last week, but, you know, it went from, you know, what we were seeing, tens of thousands of cases, positivity, and then we were seeing the large death numbers, and they have gone down. But when 500 people a day are dying of it, and we're still getting positive diagnoses, particularly now with the variants in young people, in kids, they're seeing more kids being hospitalized. I'm glad that we're taking this time to go over this topic, because people still need to be careful. And if you're in large groups of people, and if you are inside, I wouldn't mistake, because different states are doing things differently. Obviously, we're in a conservative state that took away all of the precautions. Boom, that was it. And people want to go back to normal. They've got COVID fatigue from the last year and a half, and they just want to go live their lives and be normal. And it's helpful to them to have the county and the state give it the nod. You know, yeah, ditch those masks. Go out and live your life and, you know, go to all of these events, and we're going to boost our economy again, and our economy will be boosted. But, you know, at what cost, I'm waiting to see. And so, you know, one comment I would have is you need to use your judgment. I'm not sure that you can look at the CDC and the WHO and what your state has to say and what your county health department has to say. But at the end of the day, you, as my mom says, has always said, you have to use your head for something other than a hat rack, which means you've got a brain, and knowing that the pandemic isn't in the rear view yet, use your own common sense about safety precautions and trying to socially distance where you can, and wearing masks, particularly inside, inside places where there's not good, they haven't put in the new HEPA filters and taken some of the precautions that were very expensive to do, and the circulation's not good. You know, you just want to use some common sense, and the experts have changed the goalposts so many times that if you're like me, it's really hard to know who to trust, you know, out there these days, because from day to day, the criteria changes. Now, I understand in science that happens all the time. As they get more information, you know, then the guidelines change. But I also understand politics. you know, and sometimes the guidelines change due to political pressure. If it's something that's not popular with the people that's going on, like people were sick to death of mandates, and you want to be popular, no matter what party you're in, if you want to be popular, then one of the things you might do to get back in good favor is maybe not necessarily in the interest of public health as it is as much as midterms are coming up. So in any case, just a caution to people. And as far as what an autoimmune disease is, it's a disease or condition where your immune system mistakenly attacks your body. The immune system normally guards against germs like bacteria and viruses. When it senses these foreign invaders, it sends out an army of fighter cells to attack them. Normally, the immune system can tell the difference between foreign cells and your own cells. But in an autoimmune disease, the immune system mistakes part of your body, like your joints or your skin, as foreign, and it releases proteins called autoantibodies that attack the healthy cells. I'm just going to say two more things, and then I'm going to turn it over to you, Karen. But autoimmune disorders, and we're going to be talking about that, can affect every organ in your body. So if you just had one condition in mind that you thought described that, depending on your condition, this can affect any part of your body. And I was surprised. We'll talk about brain injury, but two of them that were on that list of 80, fibromyalgia and shingles were considered autoimmune disorders. And I've had shingles twice, most recently 3 days after my second vaccine. Not saying not to get one, because I had that happen to me. My parents and my husband had both of the same brand of vaccine, and they didn't have any problem at all. I happened to have issues with both injections, and that's just me. But I was surprised, because on that list of 80 things, I was surprised. I knew arthritic conditions like rheumatoid arthritis, osteoarthritis, and I'm just undiagnosed as to which one of those I know I have already. And fibromyalgia is in the arthritic category, but my issues in that neighborhood have gotten more expanded. I think there's another diagnosis there somewhere, but I was surprised to see those in with autoimmune disorders. And then finally, the drugs that treat a lot of autoimmune disorders work as immune system depressants, and we'll talk about that too. So with that opening as to the topic tonight, I will flip it over to you, who always does such great homework. There's just a little introduction, and what say you?
Thanks a lot, Kim. That was a great introduction, actually. And just to delve a little bit deeper, I'm going to explore a little bit of autoimmune 101, if you will. Little educational piece here for those in the listening audience that are interested. Just to expand a little bit on what Kim was saying, yes, the immune system disorder or the autoimmune issues, they do cause abnormally low activity, but not only low activity with your immune system, sometimes they can cause overactivity of the immune system. And in cases of immune system overactivity, that's where the body attacks and damages its own tissue, like Kim was saying, and creates those autoimmune diseases. Immune deficiency diseases decrease your body's ability to not only fight those invaders, but can also cause you to have vulnerability to different types of infections, which is why a lot of times you see folks with autoimmune disorders, they have higher tendency to get colds and pneumonias and bronchitis easier than someone else that doesn't have an autoimmune disorder, and why it's so important to be able to control some of those inflammation responses in the body and keep your inflammation at a reduced level. And we'll go into that more throughout the course of the show this evening. But in response to that unknown trigger, the immune system produces those antibodies that, instead of fighting those infections that you're getting, like the bronchitis or pneumonia or colds, it actually begins to attack the body's own tissues. So like someone that has acquired hypothyroidism or hyperthyroidism, someone that has a Graves' disease or has rheumatoid arthritis, for example. Those are all types of autoimmune disorders. And autoimmunity is triggered in brain injury that targets a range of brain-specific antigens. And in a subset of brain-injured patients, that can trigger an autoimmune response, which can develop into an autoimmune disease. Now, I say a subset of TBI patients or brain injury patients, TBI meaning traumatic brain injury, because not everyone that acquires a brain injury or has a traumatic brain injury is going to end up with some kind of autoimmune disorder. However, the majority of people in some way, shape, or form that have experienced the brain injury do experience some kind of changes in their immune system, which is pretty intriguing when you start to read more about it and look more into it. Now, a front runner in functional health education on the brain and autoimmune conditions is a doctor by the name of Datis Karazian, a PhD. And he's also the author of the book, Why Isn't My Brain Working? Now, he makes a distinct quote. Again, that's Why Isn't My Brain Working? And that's by Datis, D-A-T-I-S, Karazian, K-H-A-R-R-A-Z-I-A-N, and as in Nancy, and that's PhD. And he makes the direct quote that says, for example, a person who sustains a head injury suddenly develops an autoimmune disease, or a problem in brain function sparks full food intolerances. When brain injury or impairment triggers an inflammatory response in the body, it's known as, quote, brain immune dysregulation disorder. Now I'm going to repeat that. Brain immune dysregulation disorder. Now, researching and treating autoimmune disorders secondary to brain injury is emerging as a stronger field in neuroimmunology. And researchers are now understanding that the brain profoundly impacts the body's immune system, and that compromised brain health can not only alter immune regulation and modulation, so basically the balance of the immune system, and increases the inflammation throughout the entire body. So if you have blood work done and you have high inflammation markers and you're not sure why you have inflammation markers, when it's several years after your injury and you no longer have inflammation from your orthopedic injuries, secondary to your brain injury, you may have sustained an autoimmune disorder or a reduction in your immune system functioning properly. And the term leaky gut has become a leading topic in medical health news and recent studies. Mm-hmm. Have you heard of that, Kim?
I have, yes.
And however, a term I don't know if you've heard of, it's called leaky brain. Have you heard of that yet?
No, I haven't. Leaky gut is, where I stopped. And you could talk a little bit about that. But, no, I'd like to hear about leaky brain. I can only guess, but no, I haven't read anything about that yet. That hasn't popped in front of me.
Okay.
Now.
Well, let's explore just a little bit here. The leaky brain is first of all, it's anything new on the horizon in the medical field is often viewed as controversial. Anytime there's a new discovery, a new test, a new lab, a new diagnosis, any kind of new discovery. So I will say that leaky brain is currently another controversial discussion on the rise. However, studies surrounding the viability of a leaky brain or a blood-brain barrier connection to cognitive injury and decline, it shows damaged blood vessels compromising the health of the patient. Now, what I mean by that is that current research and studies conducted during the past 5 to 10 years, so pretty recent studies, surrounding the autoimmune antibody connection to traumatic brain injury indicate that the body's immune system deteriorates after injury. Now, that's a pretty powerful statement. And the studies are pretty powerful and cutting edge as far as being able to establish a treatment care plan for individuals subsequent to having a brain injury. I want to repeat that, though, is that current research and studies conducted during the past 5 to 10 years surrounding the autoimmune antibody connection to traumatic brain injury indicate the body's immune system deteriorating after injury. Now, I don't want to give the image that all brain injury is bleak, you know, like doom and gloom. That's not what I want to put out at all. What I want people to do is be self-aware, be able to advocate for themselves with their provider. You know, knowledge is power, and knowledgeable patients can take care and take charge of their health during some of these early stages of trauma by working with the right medical team or establishing a strong medical team while they're learning to recognize and manage their brain injury and any subsequent health issues after that injury. Now,
Well, nothing. I was just pondering as you were talking, for those that don't know about leaky gut, because I'm putting these two together, what you just told me as I'm processing that, you know, leaky gut is where bacteria and toxins enter the bloodstream and can cause widespread inflammation, possibly triggering a reaction from the immune system. So if you have leaky gut syndrome, that can include bloating and what you said, food sensitivities, fatigue, digestive issues, skin problems, and so there has been a lot of talk about that. But I can see at the same time, when you look at some of the diseases out of the 80 that are directly brain related, and you know there's quite a few when you get around to it, but you know, encephalitis, and there's a list, but really with any of them, when it comes to the blood-brain barrier, many of the people that I've spoken to, including my own doctors, you know, have said that when you have a brain trauma and if you've had brain surgery, particularly, although that's not at all a prerequisite, that gets disturbed. So whether it got disturbed by the injury or the surgery or whatever the trigger was that kicked the immune system in the gut, I just think that that's really interesting because it wasn't right away after my brain injury, and I had chronic pain issues, still do, since my original injury. But for example, the fibromyalgia came years after that, but I saw it as an extension of the facial pain, which, you know, I've never known if that's scar tissue or just leftover residual from a brain aneurysm or exactly what causes the head and neck and facial pain. But it was almost like, picture electricity, you know, because we are kind of electricity, going whew, down the rest of your body into your joints. That's what it felt like with the onset of the fibro. And, you know, and I was young. I was, you know, I was in my middle 30s. And so to suddenly have that pain spread out like that, I could see, and as you say, it's going to take time for them to work that out exactly. I feel it. I get it. You know, I live with it every day. But I wouldn't be surprised. It took them a while to get around to acknowledging the leaky gut. But certainly, I think the leaky brain is also going to have a lot of merit to it.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, the common hormonal problems that happen after a brain injury, your hormones and your endocrine system tie in very closely with your immune system. And, you know, they're just, they one doesn't operate without the other. But the common hormonal problems after a brain injury can be growth hormone deficiency. It can be adrenal insufficiency. Hypothyroidism is seen quite often, where someone acquires hypothyroidism secondary to a brain injury, hypogonadism, hyperprolactinemia, and also antidiuretic, diuretic hormone or ADH insufficiency. And, you know, how treatment for post-concussion syndrome can and can't help with some of those post-traumatic hypopituitarism symptoms is where the challenge comes in. Is how do we address those things, and what exactly does that look like, and how do healthcare providers become aware and provide the best care for their patients based on that information? And it's basically just educating themselves and doing the same thing that you and I are doing, and that's doing the research, you know, reading the research papers and just listening to your patients and what they're going through, and you know, and just going from there. For example, the blood-brain barrier, just to explain a little bit further on what you were saying, it's like a semi-permeable gate between the brain and the bloodstream. So there's a lot of correlation with what's going on with your blood and what's going on in your brain. And no other organ other than your brain has that barrier like that. So when the barrier is working properly, it holds the proteins and molecules in that bathe the brain and protect it from all those foreign substances or those nasty germs and invaders, right? But when you have a blow to the head or a head injury, the barrier opens so slightly, just like a crack in the door, and allows some of those proteins to leak into the bloodstream, which is what causes that inflammation and causes the body to essentially begin to attack itself. Now, from 2000 to, I believe it was 2020, I believe it was just this most recent year, the Department of Defense reported approximately 430,000 TBIs, with about 80% classified as MTBI or concussion. Now, because U.S. service members incur repetitive brain injuries or repetitive concussions, they have a high risk factor for developing CTE. And when we look at contact sports and motor vehicle accidents, as well as military training and combat, the Department of Defense and the National Collegiate Athletic Association partnered together between that 2000 and 2020 to form a group called the Concussion Assessment, Research, and Education Consortium. Now that's a mouthful for you. The concession.
Yes.
Concussion Assessment Research and Education Consortium, also known as CARE. And basically that is a group that creates a national multi-site research network that studies the clinical and neurobiological history of what else, brain injury. And it provides a vast database that researches primary and secondary mechanisms of debilitating processes after brain injury. So basically, what kind of things are happening to the body in the course of rehabilitation, even years afterwards, with the goal of improving the protection, improving the diagnosis, the treatment, returning soldiers to activity and active duty criteria, and what is the cost and the inflection of neurodegenerative disease, and how can we prevent that? And particularly within the military population, when they're studying MTBI or the mild traumatic brain injury and post-traumatic stress disorder or PTSD, they're finding that brain injury and PTSD frequently coexist with each other. And with that comes a lot of autoimmune disorders that have developed in those individuals. And the mechanics and resultant brain injury patterns consequent to those brain injuries are opening up a whole revealing process of how the brain works and how it ties into the body directly. Now, there was a publication made. Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say one of the things that makes that difficult with the PTS, while we're talking about politically correct, I guess, and I'd like to say that our group has all sexes, races, religions, political persuasions. We got everybody in this group. But what I was going to say is one of the problems both in autoimmune disorders and diagnosing them properly and in PTS and brain injury are the overlapping symptoms. So I used to, and I still do, get angry a lot of times at what I refer to as the traditional medical model and the lack of knowledge in a lot of places about brain injury, and really having to look hard to find specialists. You talked earlier about building a team of specialists, not a cakewalk to find, people who have actually, that's not just a neurosurgeon, a neurologist. You know, it's got to be somebody who knows something and has had a number of patients. And that's, what I kind of recommend you asking if you're looking for a new doctor is, stating a primary condition or two of yours, and asking how many patients they've dealt with that specific malady. Because then the science becomes hard because of the overlapping symptoms. And so, it would be hard for an expert, but if you don't have an expert, then you're really in jeopardy of misdiagnosis. There's so many, you brought up the military example, so many, and we, you and I did a show on last month on blast injuries and acoustic TBI, and there are so many in the military that have been diagnosed, the easy diagnosis, PTS, who wouldn't have post-traumatic stress after being in downrange and in the war theater, right? So that's a quick diagnosis to give. But as we talked about, a lot of opportunities for TBI, in fact, TBI will be the hallmark injury from this 20-year conflict we're just winding down. And a lot of people, veterans, have not been diagnosed yet with TBI and may not be for quite some time. And they'll be helped some with the PTSD, but things still won't be quite right unless the doctor explores that other area. And I think the same thing is true with a lot of autoimmune disorders. As I was reading through, you know, when I was blown away with the 80, and then I was looking at the top 10 and reading their similarities, it would make diagnosis easier on some conditions, harder on others. You know, one, and I'll let you go on with your train of thought. That was really all I had to say about that. But we're hearing more about Hashimoto's, and I think you and I were talking about that at some point. That's one of the autoimmune disorders, and it has to do with the thyroid, right? If I'm remembering correctly.
It does.
And yes. And after you make your comments that I interjected my thought there just about the overlapping condition, the overlapping symptoms and making diagnosis difficult, whether it's military or civilian, at some point we might want to talk about that too, because I've seen some articles come up lately and some mention of that, and people aren't so familiar with it. They've heard of hyperthyroid, hypothyroid, aren't so aware, I guess, of the intricacies of Hashimoto's. And it also has overlapping symptoms into other places. And so there's so many ways to be misdiagnosed. And then when the common treatment in the traditional medical model is to throw a pill at it, if your diagnosis is wrong or not complete to begin with, then the medication that you're giving may or may not be effective for your condition, but can also can contribute to undermining your immune system. So it's important.
Oh, absolutely, it's important. Which, you know, brings me to, you created a nice segue there for me, so thank you very much for that. And that's talking about changing our thinking. You know, not just changing our thinking as patients, but it's, you know, research is suggesting a new way of thinking about concussions and brain injury in general, even from a research and provider perspective. Changing the thinking about concussions to reflect concussions or brain injuries as an autoimmune disorder. So if somebody has a brain injury, they also have an autoimmune disorder to some degree, where the brain degeneration could result from an out-of-control immune response, similar to what multiple sclerosis patients experience. Now, when we're talking about that type of research and where that came from, there was an article published in the journal PLOS One, PLOSONE, by the University of Rochester Medical Center and the Cleveland Clinic. And what that research found was that there's a blood lab or blood protein called S as in Sam, 100B, B as in boy. So S100B. And S100B is a well-accepted protein biomarker for traumatic brain injury. And with the football players they studied, they had this S100B protein biomarker, and it was present in varying degrees in their blood samples. And they did that with 67 football players after every game. And even though none of them necessarily suffered a concussion, they did demonstrate that even the most routine hit to their body have some impact on the blood-brain barrier and possibly the brain itself. So for purposes of that project, the team wanted to explore, you know, like, what happens after that S100B surges from the brain and enters the bloodstream, especially after a concussion or a higher impact, like, say, from a car wreck. And again, they made a really important finding, that the body views that S100B as an enemy, and it begins to form antibodies against it as if it were a virus. So basically, your brain, when it sustains trauma, opens that crack in the door we talked about earlier between the brain and blood barrier and releases this S100B protein and other proteins that begins to form antibodies as if it were a virus and starts attacking the body. And that's where you get the inflammation. That's where you get a buildup of those antibodies that results in a more vigorous attack on the bloodstream. But in the process, they also learned that some of those antibodies sneak back in through the damaged blood-brain barrier to the brain, and they begin to harm healthy brain cells and produce the S100B protein in the first place. Now, it's basically like a missile, right? Searching for a target. And the brain becomes that target, and so does the immune system. And so, you know, the research is very fluid. It's going to evolve and grow over time. But it's really important for those of us that are experiencing autoimmune disorders and experiencing things going on with our bodies even years after our brain injury and after our rehabilitation processes. Now, in multiple sclerosis, a similar breakdown occurs when the body's own immune system damages that myelin sheath around the brain. And other conditions that harm blood-brain barriers include, for example, sepsis, that's when you have an overwhelming infection throughout your body, burns, critical illness, or even seizures, like from epilepsy. Now, Forrest Tennant, who's a medical doctor, he documented that a secondary consequence of brain injury consists of three specific things. Based on his education or his research. The first is hypothalamic pituitary dysfunction. And that's when you have damage to the hypothalamus in your brain, and it affects your pituitary and hypothalamus communication with each other. And any number of deficiencies, including your adrenals, your gonadal, and your thyroid, can result from that hypothalamic pituitary dysfunction and throw off your immune system. Now, second, remember, the first was the hypothalamic pituitary dysfunction. Second was pain besides headache may occur, and it usually presents like fibromyalgia. Now, that's important based on what you were saying, Kim, because pain is a common development after brain injury in a person's body because of the autoimmune response secondary to that brain injury. And in fact, the diagnosis of fibromyalgia has shown centralized pain secondary to TBI. And most of those patients, you know, they'll complain of, and you know this from firsthand experience, pain all over that is muscular in nature. Now, the third is the induction of the autoimmune inflammatory disorder. Now, one working theory, in addition to the hypothalamic pituitary dysfunction, is that damaged brain tissue leaks. Remember we were talking about that leaky brain? Is that the damaged brain tissue leaks through the blood-brain barrier into the general circulation and becomes, in fact, an antigen, just like a virus or an allergen. And then, you know, you have the increase in colds, the increase in pain response. You have the increase in inflammation, sore joints, sore body all over. Maybe you have increased infection, increased colds, bronchitis, pneumonias, because your body's not fighting off those common antigens like it was before the brain injury. And antibodies are formed against brain tissue that may become basically an automatic response and start to attack those tissues including the brain itself. Now, let me slow down a little bit. Regardless of an autoimmune inflammatory disorder, regardless of how that may develop after head trauma, it's not only cause for joint and muscle pain, but like you were saying earlier, it also attacks other organs, such as your eyes, your lungs,
mm-hmm.
your heart, your liver, your intestine, your kidney. You know how we were talking about leaky gut? Well, leaky gut and leaky brain, you know, that coincides with each other. And just like any autoimmune inflammatory condition, you know, an interest in brain injury in general has grown recently. We're seeing more and more of it. We're hearing more and more education about it. More and more awareness is being brought to it, partly because of improved recognition and reporting of the disorder, partially because of podcasts and groups like ours, Brain Injury Association of America, brainline.org, different organizations out there bringing, you know, awareness to brain injury in general and their signs and symptoms and how we face those signs and symptoms and how we deal with them. Also, because of high-profile contact sports athletes, and mm-hmm. then to reference back to our military, returning soldiers from Iraq and Afghanistan. I mean, in the 1920s, I think it was 20s or 30s, don't quote me on the dates, but I'm guessing the era, is that back then they didn't call it brain injury. They called it something like, do you remember the boxers? They used to call
shell
them
shock.
The neurological, yeah, or punch drunk. You know, like
mm-hmm.
The neurological deterioration where they got hit in the head over and over, where they were fighting with their bare hands. They used to call that punch drunk or dementia
yeah.
puglistica, you know, or the madness
yes.
of the fighters. How a boxer
right.
would go crazy after so many boxing events. Well,
mm-hmm.
today, that punch drunk is called chronic traumatic encephalopathy, or CTE.
Right.
And that's what you see when you see someone who has had multiple concussions over time, whether that is someone that has experienced blast injury, brain injuries, in combat, whether that is someone in high-profile contact sports, whether that's someone that is a survivor of domestic violence who has been traumatized in the head over and over by their partner, whether that's someone who has had, you know, a numerous amount of concussions, whether that maybe it's a combination of a car wreck and sports and combat, you know, throughout their lifetime. And when you see those kinds of things building up, research has shown that degeneration of the brain tissue may occur, and it accumulates an abnormal protein designated as tau, and that's T-A-U.
Right.
And that's another protein
right.
they look for in the body as well. So I'll take a breath here. That's what we're referencing when we're talking about autoimmune disorders, their relationship to brain injury, and that is my autoimmune 101 for you. Secondary
yeah.
injury.
Yeah, that's really great. And again, I think that's important for all of the reasons that I mentioned. But when you do have an autoimmune disorder, and again, a couple of them that, you know, I mentioned the 80, but the ones that they mention specifically on this particular, which is what I'll look up my source here in a minute, but autoimmune encephalitis, autoimmune related epilepsy, CNS or central nervous system vasculitis, Hashimoto's encephalopathy, neuromyelitis optica, optica neuritis, neurosarcoidosis, neuro-Behçet's disease and cerebral Lewis. It was Duke University that listed these, and they talk about a decline in cognitive performance, like you were saying, seizures, abnormal movements, vision loss, weakness of arms or legs, loss of language, and sleep issues. And in some cases, there's a physical and a psychiatric element, and the psychiatric element can be severe depression, hallucinations, OCD, or just erratic behavior or paranoia. So, I think that the autoimmune discussion is important to have because, you know, we want to be careful. A lot of times, you know, we have good days and bad days with our brain injuries and, you know, with our health, days that are better than others and, you know, don't think much. We want to go out and live our life like everybody else, like we used to live our life, you know, and sometimes that's not possible, you know, that we do things exactly. Our battery runs out. I posted a thing on, not meaning to deviate much from the topic, but as long as we're taking a break for a second, I posted a thing on neurofatigue the other night. Both of us talked a little about being tired before we came on the air, and you know, a lot of these conditions, that is a symptom comes, is neurofatigue, and that's one that I thought the description of the post, and I can't take credit for it, and in fact, I can't even credit the person that did it. My friend Rico, who's got an aneurysm group support page, posted it, and it's not his either. So just something he found along the way. But it just nails neurofatigue. And while you just have to see the post, I'll post it again on Brain Injury Radio's Facebook page. But it's on my In a Flash page, a couple posts down. And I liken it to I have an older model cell phone, Apple phone, because it was the last model that had the plug to be able to plug in earbuds instead of having to go to the Bluetooth. And we think we talked about this before. But in any case, what it talks about is that a healthy person, you know, gets their good night's sleep, and they get up with their battery charged, and their battery is fully charged, and they get through the day, you know, they get through the morning, they get through lunchtime, and maybe, you know, they get to snicker time or something, you know, at 4 in the afternoon and have a little yawn, but, you know, then they have a bite of something or, you know, or a drink or do a little exercise, and they're good to go, you know, until it's bedtime. And so their battery might come down to 3/4, you know, over the course of the day, but they started out with a full battery. And with us, it's questionable after our injury whether our battery is ever at 100%. And if we do have problems sleeping, particularly, even if we don't, but a lot of us do, sleep too much, sleep too little, don't get restorative sleep, sleep apnea, I mean, all kinds of different sleeping issues, that for a person with a brain injury, it's like waking up in the morning on 50% charged and getting through, you know, the morning and lunchtime, and just right after that in the early afternoon, that battery's starting to slide down. And people like me, by the time it gets to be 3:30 or 4 o'clock, I have to lay down and take a nap. And not ashamed to say so, used to be, but, you know, as I've gotten older, and I think that plays into it too, I think our brain injuries, and I'm not a doctor, but my feeling at having one at age 35 is that it aged my brain instantly. on a lot of levels. And then as I actually have gotten older, into older decades, what comes naturally to healthy people as they age and their brain starts to shrink is just more compounded in me and symptoms I already had, like with the short-term memory and so forth. But then, you know, but somewhere between 3 and 4, when I lay down for that nap, you know, my charge is at 0, you know, and my phone has shut off by itself, mm-hmm. you know, it's boom, I'm out. And, you know, I go in and lay down to get my 50% charge back in my brain, to be able to get up at dinner time and, you know, go until it's time to go to bed. You know, I get a reboot at that point and a little more energy. Now, that's not exactly the way that they put it. They didn't use the cell phone analogy, but something similar enough that that's what I equated it to, because of this phone of mine, you know, it really sucks the juice out fast on the older model. I'm not sure about the newer one. It seems like they've always charged a lot for a pretty crappy battery. It makes me worry about the cars that'll be coming out that'll be electric that you have to charge, you know, how long those batteries are going to work. God, I hope it's more than an iPhone. But anyway, you know, depending on, a lot of times I'm talking a lot on the phone in the morning, you know, getting things done, and I'm shocked, you know, it can blow a whole charge by noon, and sometimes I do. And so, you know, trying to explain some of these brain conditions to people who aren't privy to it, haven't lived it, you know, you hear people that say, well, I get tired too, or I slept crappy last night, so I'm pretty wiped today too. But you know, they don't really realize what it's like to plan your life around that, plan your schedule around that. You know, I gave an example once of, say, this was pre-pandemic, I gave an example, you know, say there was a concert on, a wedding reception on Friday night, a concert on Saturday, a family gathering on Sunday. And, you know, I used to be able to go to all those things and say yes to all those things and make an appearance and be high energy and enjoy it. And now I know better than to say yes to all of those things, because mm-hmm. I know that I won't be. I could maybe, my car, you know, my husband could maybe drive me to all three of those things, but I wouldn't be present, you know, I wouldn't be fully present, and wouldn't be fun and bounce in, you know, like I do when I'm well rested. It's not only in a day's time, but planning a life in your activities, or in first person, planning my life and my activities. I have to really look at, when I'm setting up engagements and things like that I'm not planning too many things in one day or one weekend, or I look at the next week, you know, on my calendar, and I see that I've got a doctor's appointment one day and something I've got to help my family with on another day. I've got my show on Wednesday. I prep for my show on Tuesday. Okay, that week I'm not going to be able to do blah, this, you know, and it isn't because my date book's full, my dance card's full.
No, it's not the lack of interest or desire.
Right. Yeah, go ahead and go on. I was done. But yeah, not for lack of interest and desire. It's just inability to do so. So that's a change, you know, a change that a lot of us have had to deal with. And I think that when I was on last week, my guest didn't show up. Well, we rescheduled is what we did. I don't want to make it sound like that. But I was going to not, a lot has been going on, and I was going to not do the show and put in a tape, but I, you know, I came on and I called it Off the Grid, and I just talked a little bit about what was going on in my life. That was before I read the news and got all fired up. It was just some other things that were weighing heavy, draining that battery, you know, draining my battery a lot faster than normal. And, you know, had some people, some wonderful people call in and rescue me from talking to myself for 2 hours. I have the leeway, obviously. I could have said my piece and played some music and made the show shorter. It's not like I'm, you know, nobody's cracking the whip on me around here or anything, but you know, it wound up being like a 2.5-hour show because people wound up calling in and, you know, we were talking about different things like this and how relatable. And again, when I said that earlier about, I didn't mean to just almost bite my tongue off and say, gentlemen, the attorney's comments earlier, one of the things one of my callers said last week when he called in is that, and it didn't have to do with this topic that I talked about in the opening, this lawyer's comments, it didn't have to do with that at all. He was talking about society at large, and he said to me, and his name is Gary, not my husband Gary, he was in bed, but Gary Turner, actually. And he's someone that I've known in the brain injury community, but we don't talk all the time. He was maybe a guest on my show 8 or 9 years ago. We don't keep in touch like that, you know, but we're aware of who each other is. I was pleased that, you know, Gary called in, and one of the comments he made about, I was just talking about how hectic and chaotic it is and that, you know, that I wish things weren't so divisive, that some peace would come, you know, and then talking about that, you know, I'm responsible for finding that peace inside of me regardless of what's going on externally, but it's challenging, you know. And one of the things he said is that he said, you know, you've known me, we've known each other, who each other is, for a really long time. He said, but you don't know, he said, I guess, you know, my name, Gary, you know what sex I am, but you don't know what color I am, what faith I am, what political persuasion I am, whatever. He went on, you know, with, and I don't, you know, and I don't with the people that call in, the people that are in the chat, a lot of our listeners that I get mail from. I have no idea, you know, what those demographics are. What I do know is what unites us. And that's that we all have a brain injury, and that gives us insight that people who don't have it simply don't have. You know, they don't have it. But it's something that I think we're empathetic and have compassion for each other because we have an understanding of how that works in our own life. And I talked about the very first time I tuned into a show, you know, before I was a host, when I discovered Brain Injury Radio, and Craig was, well, he was the only one that did a show. He had some guest hosts sometimes, but it was he who started it, and he was doing the deal on Monday night, so it had to be a Monday. But, you know, I had been nearly 20 years without a support group, knowing anyone else who had a brain injury, knowing that those organizations that profess to advocate for us, I didn't know that they existed. There wasn't a computer on every desk. It was a very polarizing place to be for 20 years. And I thought I was the only one. That's why I feel so blessed that we can be here to let people know that's not the case. But I tune in and I'm flipping through on this platform. There's a lot of, you know, different shows, and I'm flipping through and I get to this one in time to hear Craig talk about living in a world of post-it notes. And I just immediately, I don't know whether I turned beet red or the color drained from my face, but it was like when you're a kid and you get caught with your hand in the cookie jar. I lived in that world of post-it notes, and I had been single for a long time before. I didn't get married till I was in my mid-40s, so, you know, I had post-it notes all over everywhere. And what was sad is that a lot of times I didn't want people who came over to know that I lived in this world of post-it notes, so I hid them. Well, then what did I do? I forgot. You know,
you forgot.
where I put these important post-it notes, you know. It took me years to figure out to get a notebook and to put these post-it notes in a notebook where they're not quite as obvious as, you know, pasted all over my house at different places, but I know the go-to place to find them. You know, it took me a while to process that. But I'll never forget that very first, he was the very first comment I ever heard from another survivor that just took me so off guard, because he knew. Oh, my God, he knows, you know. And like I said, it had been almost 20 years of people that didn't know, me trying to tell, them not listening, me not being able to articulate it, them not being willing or able to comprehend it because it didn't fit their agenda. I looked normal again. I sounded normal again. I should be normal again, by God. And then all of a sudden, you know, I trip on another survivor, and he hasn't even talked to me yet, and he knows more about me than a bunch of people. And I realized that moment, here's somebody I've never met. And that's what, you know, Gary was saying last week is, you know, we've talked before, but you really don't have any idea about any of these categories that people are out there arguing about, causing this division that you're talking about, that static and sensory overload, you know, the,
mm-hmm.
you know, that's in the background. That makes you just want to go in the backyard and watch the birds and the grass grow, you know, and just get away, you know, from all of that. So, you know, again, we're winding down toward the end of the show, but I wasn't looking, you know, I wasn't looking for that news piece when it was put in front of me and got me fired up. But, you know, we work so hard as individuals with a brain injury, you know, we don't define ourselves by our brain injury, but it is a condition that we live with.
Right.
And,
absolutely.
You know, we define ourselves by lots of other things that we do and feel and the kind of person that we are. And it's just hard, you know, it's hard sometimes. You know, thank God for compensatory strategies like those post-it notes and like me tripping in here and then winding up staying for a decade, you know, and doing this. But it became so important. I didn't want anybody to have to live their life the way I did for 20 years. And here was an opportunity. You know, talk about another man who kicked a door open. You know, I talked about one aspect of a man kicking the door open and making room for an opportunity to educate people on what's not appropriate. And then you talk about another man who kicked a door open to give me the chance to help other people not have to live like I did for 20 years. And for that, mm-hmm. I am so grateful.
And it's great that we can share information about the things that we come across and learn. And it provides a conduit for us to speak about our own experiences, too. You know, it's not only helpful to our listening audience, but it's also got some therapeutic and cathartic processes for us, too, being able to talk about it and work through it and, you know, and share some of the things we're discovering. And specifically about these autoimmune diseases, I acquired hypothyroidism secondary to a brain injury that I received in 1992. And my thyroid was managed quite well, actually, up until 2014. And then in 2014 is when I sustained my life-changing brain injury. And that's when, well, I guess the first one was life-changing too, but not to the level that the second one was. The second one was affected my memory, my short-term and long-term memory. My hypothyroidism became unmanageable. In fact, we still haven't got it completely managed yet. And then in 2018, I got diagnosed with Hashimoto's. And now you can have Hashimoto's without having hypothyroidism. However, Hashimoto's is commonly acquired from untreated hypothyroidism. However, my hypothyroidism has been treated quite extensively over the last several years, specifically more aggressively in the last 7 years since the 2014 brain injury that I sustained, along with that wreck. So I have a lot of passion for the autoimmune topic in general because of all these things going on. And when I asked the specialists I work with, how come I got Hashimoto's when I'm treating the hypothyroidism? That doesn't make sense to me. How did I end up with this? I'm watching what I eat. My activity could be better, way better. I just really struggle with the activity piece because of my physical injuries. However, my diet is not horrible. So how did I end up with this disease process? And they told me, they said, you know what, Karen, because you sustained that brain injury and it affects the way that your brain communicates with your body. And because it's not communicating, it's not necessarily recognizing that you're replacing those thyroid, the thyroid with the medication you're taking. So it's working against itself. So it makes it challenging, and I'm not going to get into all that. It's a whole other show. But examples of other autoimmune diseases that I did want to cover for those that may be listening and wondering what other diseases are included in autoimmune is that rheumatoid arthritis, and that's where your immune system produces antibodies that basically attach to the linings of your joints, and that causes inflammation, swelling, and pain. And a lot of times people with rheumatoid arthritis end up with a co-diagnosis of fibromyalgia, or a lot of times they'll be diagnosed with fibromyalgia before they're diagnosed with rheumatoid arthritis or as the fibromyalgia progresses. Then there's also systemic lupus, and that affects the joints, the lungs, the blood cells, the nerves, the kidneys. And then there's inflammatory bowel disease, and also along the inflammatory bowel disease is when the system attacks the lining of the intestines. This can cause random episodes of diarrhea. You may get rectal bleeding. You may have the sense of urgency to have a bowel movement, abdominal pain, fever. You may sustain weight loss. Ulcerative colitis and Crohn's disease are the two major forms. Two major forms of inflammatory bowel disease, which is an autoimmune disorder. A lot of people don't know that. And multiple sclerosis, which is an immune where the immune system attacks the actual nerve cells, causing symptoms that can include pain, blindness, weakness, poor coordination, and muscle spasms. And then type 1 diabetes mellitus, That's when the antibodies attack and destroy your insulin-producing cells in the pancreas. And then there's the I'm gonna ruin this name. I always say it wrong, but Guillain-Barré syndrome. I know I'm saying that wrong.
Oh yes,
but it's
yes.
When
no, that's right.
It's Guillain. It's
right.
When the immune system attacks the nerves controlling the muscles in the legs, and sometimes the upper arms and upper body, and then weakness results, and it can be mild weakness to sometimes really severe weakness, and then it becomes necessary to filter the blood with a procedure called plasmapheresis, and then there's also a chronic inflammatory dimyelinating polyneuropathy. Say that 3 times real fast.
Yeah.
And that's when the immune system attacks the nerves, but symptoms last much longer than they do in Guillain-Barré. And about 30%
mm-hmm.
of patients can become confined to a wheelchair if they're not diagnosed and treated early enough. So, again, is an autoimmune disorder. And then you have psoriasis. In psoriasis, something you don't think of as an autoimmune disorder, it attacks the blood cells. Well,
mm-hmm.
it's where the immune system blood cells called T cells collect in the skin. And the immune system activity stimulates those skin cells to basically reproduce a really rapid, kind of silvery, scaly, kind of like plaques or levels of skin on top of your skin.
Right.
Then there's
right.
Graves' disease. That's where the immune system produces antibodies that stimulate the thyroid gland to release excess amounts of thyroid called hyperthyroidism. And symptoms of Graves' disease can include bulging eyes, you sustain weight loss, nervousness, irritability, rapid heart rate, weakness, and brittle hair where you lose large amounts of hair. And destruction mm-hmm. or removal of the thyroid gland can also kick you into acquiring Graves' disease as well. And then Hashimoto's thyroiditis, which I was talking about, that
right.
I've acquired, and that's where antibodies produced by the immune system attack your thyroid gland, and it slowly destroys the cells that produce the thyroid hormone. And low levels of thyroid hormone develop. That's called hypothyroidism. And usually over months,
right.
it takes over months to years for that symptomology to really present itself. And it can include fatigue, constipation, weight gain, depression, dry skin, the sensitivity to cold, and a lot of other things. Then there's myasthenia gravis. And that's when antibodies bind to nerves and make them unable to stimulate muscles properly. And it creates a weakness that gets worse with activity. And that's the main symptom of myasthenia gravis. And then
I want to jump in. Wait. I'm sorry, just a minute. I don't want to interrupt you, but we've got about 10 minutes left, and there's so many of these. I'd kind of like to you know, as I mentioned, there's 80 of these autoimmune disorders, and I encourage you, you know, I'm glad that you brought up psoriasis. People don't remember that the skin is one of the largest organs of the body. So if you have a skin condition, there's a test called the ANA, the anti-nuclear antibody test, that's often one of the first tests that doctors use when symptoms suggest an autoimmune disease, and a positive means that you have one of these diseases that Karen's been talking about, but it won't necessarily confirm which one you have for sure. And so other tests look for specific autoantibodies in certain autoimmune diseases. And so, you know, bottom line, that ANA blood test may be indicative of an autoimmune disease, and then hopefully your doctor is going to do the right testing to be able to pinpoint, even though many of them have overlapping symptoms, exactly what which of these conditions you have and to be able to treat it appropriately. But again, I'm glad that we brought this topic up tonight because, you know, like I said in the beginning, I think people had an idea about what autoimmune diseases were or underlying conditions is the verbiage that was thrown around at the beginning of the pandemic, you know, was underlying conditions. Well, what are those? Okay, well, they're autoimmune disorders, you know, things that knock your immune system down and make you more susceptible to infections and viruses and things like that. And so knowing that there's 80 of them out there of conditions, and then, yes, age is one of them, and weight is one of them, obesity is one of them, not an autoimmune disorder necessarily, but an underlying condition. And so, you know, with all of the information tonight of the many, many autoimmune disorders there were, and I don't know, maybe Karen had a clue that there were that many. I did not. You know, when I started doing my homework for the show and was just overwhelmed with the volumes of information on how many different conditions there are, I thought, my God, no wonder, you know, there were a lot of problems, and it wasn't just with seniors like people thought. You know, people of all ages are affected with underlying conditions. And so, again, I guess I would just encourage people, as we're on the eve of summer or have just entered summer. I'm sorry, I don't know the first day of summer, but it's, I know the weather has arrived here to substantiate that it's any minute if it hasn't happened already. I think the first day of summer is in the next couple of days. And as you go out, COVID fatigue, and depending on the rules for your state, you know, again, to just be careful out there. The pandemic isn't over, and it would be a shame. You know, I told the story once, and then I'm going to be quiet. We're going to close out with, you know, 7 minutes left. But my great-grandma, the great influenza of 1918, she made it all the way to March of 1920, and then she died of the great influenza of that pandemic. And I didn't know that till you and I were talking about genealogy the other night, and I found that out. My grandpa's mom, so my great-grandma on my mom's side, actually lived through, and that would be like now, you've lived through the last year and a half, maybe without incurring COVID. But as summer starts and you're out there wanting to resume life as it was before, again, no matter what your local health department or the CDC or the WHO or whatever, whoever, Fauci, whatever, no matter who it is, you understand what conditions you may have that might make you susceptible, and your rule set might be a little bit different than the next person's rule set. Personally, I think we should all continue to be careful for a while yet, especially when we see how it goes with, for example, in my state. I'm very interested before I resume many of my old activities, and I may be overcautious. I may not be. I found out I've got quite a few autoimmune conditions, more than I knew that I had. And so I'm going to wait, you know, over the next couple months to see what happens to everybody else who abandons the safety protocols that have been out there and the mandates that have been out there through the pandemic and want to just go back to quote unquote life as normal. Not trying to be a wet blanket, just trying to, you know, air a word of caution you know, watch and see mm-hmm. what's happening and be careful, you know, resume some of your life activities, try to do them at a distance, you know,
right.
And if you're inside, you may want to wear a mask for a while longer. You know, there's a big debate on one side about, you know, why would people who have been vaccinated still be wearing a mask? Well, I got two answers to that, and then I really got to shut up because I'm going to be talking over, so I don't want to do that. But one reason would be is that the proverbial they said that the vaccine I took was 95% effective. You read the small print and it says for people with underlying conditions and older people, that percentage goes down in some studies. They in the beginning said that it took 80% to create herd immunity. And we're not at that. You know, we're maybe around 50%, if that, of people that have had both, either had COVID and have natural immunity or have had both vaccines. So we're not at herd immunity. And hell, you know, say that you're dropped down to maybe 80%. You've had both vaccines, but you've got underlying conditions. Well, there's a window open, you know. There's a window open if your activity is careless, just because it's been a tough road and it's summer now, to want to abandon all those health protocols and listen to the news that brings up things like what I just said. Well, those are the reasons why some people are still being cautious, because the disease is still there and the window is still open. So up to you.
Right.
We live in a land of free choice. But I love you. Be cautious, be careful. And as we're starting out summer, I hope that it's a good one. I think we're definitely going to have more freedom than we had last summer. But, you know, we don't want to cause a domino effect that makes us go backwards either. For as much as we want to get through this, the best way to get through it is by seeing it through to the end, by being careful for ourselves and our fellows.
And you know, this is such a big topic, this autoimmune disorders, McKim. It would be nice if we could do a follow-up show next month, perhaps, where we can talk about how do we deal with the autoimmune disorder? How do we handle that from our diet? Like, what are some anti-inflammatory foods, some anti-inflammatory herbs, and just some ways we can approach that from a proactive standpoint, where we didn't have time to discuss that tonight.
That's true, and we will address that. We might have another topic to go along with it, but have a little carryover because Karen's got a good point. We were going to talk about that, but we ran out of time tonight, and we're out of time tonight. So we will talk about next month. There are things we can do to help fortify our immune system. They have to do with diet and nutrients and some other things. And so we will carry that over, and then we'll see what other topic we might stir around and find. But anyway, I want to thank everybody for listening tonight. Good night. God bless. Have a great week. I will see you next week. Karen will be back next month on the second Wednesday. Always appreciate having you, Karen, and thanks so much for your help and support and all you contribute to the show.
And thanks for all the hopesters out there that come and listen to our show every week and every month.
Yep. All right. Well, we started out talking about this, and so we'll end it with this. This is Daniel Christian. You can find him at danielchristianmusic.com. Really great guy. And Find My Voice. Good night, everybody. We'll see you next week.
question never seems to change. Are you with them or are you with us? And if it's true, I am not ashamed. There shouldn't be much to discuss. But for every answer that draws you near, there is an answer that will make you run. And as long as identity remains unclear, the coward will give the easy one. We can be automatic, carefully diplomatic. I need courage to speak my choice. Now that it's been a while since my courtyard denial, I am still trying to find my voice. I am still trying to find my voice. My brother is waiting to believe. We all love him just the same. There are gifts we both receive under the same sun and rain. I can't speak out of stillness, but I'm waiting to fill this space with courage to make my choice. How can we preach salvation from our own isolation? I am trying to find my voice. I am just trying to find my voice. Never knew I would come this far. When you get too good at fitting in, it's hard to tell who you really are. Now is the time to make my choice. Now is the time to find my
play one more song. It's by Christabel Braden, who is also a survivor. Find her on YouTube. Christabel Braden, CristabelleBraden. Christabel Braden, More to Me. And then good night.
In a memory, where do I belong? It's been so long, and every time I try to make sense of anything, find that I'm stressed about everything. This isn't who I used to be. When the waves came and when the storm raged, found myself falling into the crowd. I'll never come back. I'll never be the person that I want to be. When the wave came and when the storm raged, found myself falling. Giving up the fight.